This is Mission Control, Houston.
Ignition sequence start.
I've been preparing for this all my life.
Here's Porter on Harden, taking him to school.
What a great play by Jayshon Tate.
KJ Martin climbed Boban Mountain.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
And you've seen tonight that we fought together, we stayed together, and it's about damn time, man.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Matt Bullard remains a part of the Houston Rockets organization. What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, the best and only daily podcast covering your Houston Rockets. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and partner at Apollo Media. Be sure to follow along on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as at Apollo HOU. Now, quick reminder, if you enjoy what we do here at Locked On Rockets, be sure to subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. We are less than, I think, 60 followers away from our 1,000 subscriber goal. So please go smash the ever-living hell out of that subscribe button on YouTube. I would sincerely appreciate it. Now, today's episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app, join myself and the Athletics' Ali Campigiani each week live to get in on the action. Spotify Green Room, changing the way that we talk sports. Now, we have some incredible news to be able to talk about today because we found out that Matt Bullard is going to be rejoining the Houston Rockets organization in a front office role. Now, this is exciting because, first off, it was so upsetting to find out the news that Matt Bullard wasn't going to be returning to the broadcast booth because we'd already been hit over the head with the news that, you know, Bill Worrell was going to be stepping away at the end of the season. And, you know, such an iconic voice for the Houston Rockets for, you know, very, very close to 40 years, you know, the voice of the Houston Rockets. And so then to subsequently find out by way of this podcast, you know, I sat down to record a podcast with Matt and, you know, we were just going to go through, you know, our normal stuff. And, you know, he tells me before we hit the record button, hey, I'm not going to come back to AT&T Sportsnet. And that was how that news broke. And, you know, even in that very podcast, you know, I kind of like suggested to him because he mentioned, you know, potentially wanting to pursue, you know, a front office role or a coaching role, you know, somewhere in the NBA because he wanted to keep working, you know, in the NBA because that's been his life to this point and he wasn't ready to truly step away from basketball. And I kind of suggested, I was like, well, why not the Rockets? I mean, you know, and that's where we are now. So Matt Bullard joins Rafael Stone and the rest of the front office crew. And we're actually going to hear directly from the man of the hour himself and how he feels about this transition.
With the Rockets going all the way back to 1990 when I was a rookie with the team and winning the championship with Hakeem Olajuwon in 94 and then, you know, doing the broadcast for 18 years and now being in the front office for my team, it's like a dream. You know, it's like this thing that I've been doing here with the Rockets is just like a dream for me, and I'm so excited to be now working in the front office trying to rebuild a championship caliber team.
Now, Matt Bullard isn't the only hire that the Rockets made. They did add former general manager for the Boston Celtics and Memphis Grizzlies, Chris Wallace, to their staff as a scout. And I'm going to talk about Chris Wallace in the second segment because he's a bit of a polarizing figure. And so far, from what I have been able to divulge about him, it's not looking super great. The track record is not spotless, I will say. But Matt Bullard going into a little bit more detail about what he's exactly going to be working on for the Houston Rockets.
I'll be working on the basketball side for Rafael Stone. We've got Chuck Hayes and Ed Pinckney, a couple other former NBA players, along with a bunch of other really smart guys. So I'll be working on the basketball side, but I'll also be working on the business side for Gretchen Scheer. Gretchen is now the new Rockets CEO, and I've known Gretchen for 20 years. You know, we've been around this organization for a long time, so I'll be doing some work for her, community relations and working on the social media accounts and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a broad type of job description that I'll be doing and, all kinds of stuff that I really enjoy doing.
again, this is, I truly believe this is a really great move by the Rockets organization. I mean, Matt Bullard, he, not only is he, you know, Rockets basketball personified, right? He's a link to that era from the championship teams. And as much as it pains me to know that we won't have him in the broadcast booth anymore, that part kind of hurts. But for him to be able to still be around the organization, around some of these younger guys, you know, be able to kind of lend his insight, because I think he has such a unique blend of that previous experience as a former player, as somebody who kind of came up through the 90s and experienced that brand of basketball, and then through the 2000s and watched the game change and evolve, and really as one of the you know, first adopters, you know, first old heads to really accept, you know, where the game was heading, the three-point revolution, analytics, all of that. And so to take that understanding of being a former player, what it's like to really be in the locker room, you know, the chemistry element, the things that you can't really quantify, leadership, things like that, to be able to take that and then couple that with the understanding of analytics and where the game is truly moving, and couple those two things together, lends him to having this really unique level of insight that I think Rafael Stone and the rest of the Rockets front office are truly going to benefit from. So I couldn't be happier for Matt Bullard. You know, great friend of the show. You know, has been nothing but amazing to me. You know, in a professional aspect. You know, very very helpful along my career, and you know, really can't wait to see what happens moving forward with him. Hopefully, him being a part of the front office doesn't mean that he won't be able to do podcast appearances anymore. That I will continue to bug him about and see if I can, you know, I know that we won't be able to talk about certain things, but I've got to get him back on the podcast at least one more time so that he can talk about what it's like to work in the front office alongside Rafael Stone. But coming up, I do want to talk about Chris Wallace, the additional hire that Rafael Stone and the front office made. I also want to talk about a little bit of a report coming out of Jonathan Givony from ESPN regarding the Detroit Pistons and that number one overall pick, as well as a couple thoughts here or there about game one Suns Bucks. And we're going to get there after a quick message from our friends over at Spotify Green Room, because Spotify Green Room is the first social audio platform that's made for sports fans. The app is free to download. And once you get it, you could chat with me, other fans, insiders, athletes in real time about your favorite team or sport. The Rockets, right? I mean, maybe it's another team, but it's probably the Rockets if you're listening to this podcast. So Ali Campagiani and I host rooms each week live on Green Room. You can download the app, follow us at JT Gatlin at Rockets _ insider to get notifications when the rooms go live. Download the app, make a profile, come hang out. We love being able to interact with you guys. That's the best part about Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room, changing the way that we talk sports. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, let's talk Chris Wallace. Now, this was a name that I heard, and I was like, okay, cool. Former, you know, executive with the Celtics, former executive with the Grizzlies. Okay, those two organizations are looking pretty solid. He was the Celtics general manager from, I believe, about 2000, from the 2000 season all the way up through 2007, just before the Big Three era kicked off. And then he was the general manager for the Memphis Grizzlies from the 07 season all the way through to recently, past couple of years. He actually was demoted from general manager to a scout for the Grizzlies and, you know, has since been picked up by the Houston Rockets. Now, this, the track record, at least when you look at the moves made from the Grizzlies' perspective, does not look the best. And now here's, I'm going to lead off with this. He's brought in as a scout, right? So he's brought in as a talent evaluator. Now that means, thankfully, he doesn't have like final say on any of the decisions that the Rockets make. That power still rests with Rafael Stone. But some of the decisions that were made along the way, especially during the Memphis Grizzlies tenure, are not that great. So here are a few examples. Drafted Hashim Thabeet at number two ahead of James Harden, Steph Curry, and DeMar DeRozan. Traded away Kevin Love for OJ Mayo on draft night. He was the one who signed Chandler Parsons to a max deal. trading quite a bit of capital for one season of Jeff Green, and the whole Tyreke Evans like situation where he got sat and not traded while he was averaging like over 20 points a game. That was kind of a mess. Upon initial reaction to this, like looking at these examples, and I'm thinking, okay, this is not super great. And then you can also go, like, you can go specifically and look at the, you can look at the Grizzlies like draft history, right? And so it starts and stops with him during his tenure as general manager. It starts with Mike Conley and it ends with Jaren Jackson Jr. Now, there's a lot of players in the middle there that aren't super great, or just haven't, you know, had a great track record. You know, you go all the way down, you've got Hashim Thabeet, you've got the Kevin Love for OJ Mayo trade, Xavier Henry, Jamal Franklin, Jordan Adams, Jarrell Martin, guys whose names are not ringing any bells, right? Because they're either not in the league or they're buried at the end of a bench somewhere. So my immediate reaction to Chris Wallace and this, you know, hiring was, okay, let's do a little digging. Let's find out what's what. And looking at all these moves, I was actually kind of struck by the idea that there's no way that one guy is responsible for all of these moves. And so there, thankfully, and you know, could be fabricated, but it seems pretty well put together, but you know, via Reddit, somebody is kind of walking through, I'm assuming a Grizzlies fan, you know, is walking through all of the previous moves and kind of highlighting who did what and who was, you know, truly responsible for each move. And this kind of, it really resonated with me, because we go back to the whole Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook trade and who's, you know, who was really pulling the strings behind that. Was it ultimately James Harden's ultimatum? Was it Daryl Morey not, you know, digging his boots in the ground? Was it Mike D'Antoni? Was it Tillman Fertitta? Like who, you know, all of that, right? It kind of resonated with me in the sense that, okay, maybe Chris Wallace didn't have full control over all the moves that he made as the general manager for the Memphis Grizzlies. And so a few of these, right, like going all the way back to the Mike Conley one, apparently the new head coach, Mark Iveroni, got to make that choice right after Chris Wallace was hired as the general manager. Chris Wallace did not trade Kevin Love and Mike Miller to get OJ Mayo in 2008. The team owner, Michael Heisley, made that deal for himself. Chris Wallace did not want to draft Hashim Thabeet. His preference was supposedly Tyreke Evans or James Harden. The owner, Heisley, was convinced by longtime employee and director of scouting Tony Barron Sr. that the Grizzlies needed to get Thabeet because he had generational size and athleticism. That's not great for the Mobley mop, but we're going to move on past that. Chris Wallace didn't want to sign Allen Iverson in 2009. Heisley, a Georgetown graduate, demanded that AI be signed. So a lot of these moves, especially early on in Wallace's tenure, were, I guess, at the behest of the ownership group or, you know, somebody else's insight that kind of trumped his, with the owner of the Grizzlies playing a large role in that. Again, don't know how much truth there is to this, but it sounds at least enticing enough to entertain the idea that he isn't responsible for all these moves and all these decisions solely himself, right? So there's that. And not only that, though, he is responsible for what wound up being, you know, one of the best, I guess, like win-win moves ever, was the Pau Gasol trade, trading Pau Gasol to the Lakers, getting back Mark Gasol and building up, you know, the grit and grind Grizzlies with Mark Gasol, with Zach Randolph, with Tony Allen. I mean, the Grizzlies team that really everybody across the NBA fell in love with, you know, over this past, you know, five, six, 7 years, 8 years, however long grit and grind was around for, that was a fan favorite team. I mean, I loved the grit and grind Grizzlies, even as a Rockets fan. Like, I mean, I loved watching that team play. They were a fun, exciting team. Mike Conley, you know, right at the head of that squad. It was fun. So I'm kind of torn on this, because obviously there's probably not that great of a track record there. There's some other decisions, some other drafting, you know, that is questionable at best. But again, he's not being brought in as a general manager. He's being brought in as a scout, as a talent evaluator. And this kind of just lends itself to Rafael Stone's approach, right? Where he is going to, you know, seek to garner insight from wherever he can. And Chris Wallace has a wealth of experience in the NBA, over 20 years, you know, as a front office executive in the NBA, dating all the way back to the late 90s. So this is a guy who's been around the block, who kind of understands the NBA game, where things are headed. So maybe this is just, you know, another opportunity for Rafael Stone to have another, you know, voice added to the pantheon of voices in the Rockets front office, the way that he has it structured, right? There are no official titles. There's not a lot of structure going on there because he wants his front office staff and team to feel like they can scout, they can contribute, they can come up with, you know, potential trades, whatever. And that dynamic lends itself to Rafael Stone getting the most out of his staff, I believe, the most out of his team. And so hopefully the Chris Wallace thing, you know, hopefully the demons are behind him of some of the decision-making from the past. But again, I have ultimate confidence and trust in Rafael Stone. And if Rafael Stone sees something good in Chris Wallace and wanted to bring him on board because of that, then so be it. I trust that. Just like I'm going to trust whatever decision Rafael Stone ultimately makes with the number two overall pick, which, hey, might be a trade up for the Detroit Pistons' number one overall pick. And we're going to talk about that as well as maybe a little bit from Suns Bucks game one coming up here in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Bar. Because look, if you've never had a protein bar that you actually care about, right, then you've got to check out Built Bar. Because the best thing about these bars is not only do they come in so many amazing flavors, they've got raspberry, mint chocolate brownie, coconut brownie chunk, peanut butter. I mean, you name it, they've got German chocolate. Like, you know, these sound like, you know, delicious desserts, not protein bar flavors. Every single bar is low cal, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great. If you're on a keto diet, they're great. If you're trying to lose weight, maybe you're just trying to stay where you're at. Maybe you need a little, like, you know, meal replacement. You're running behind, you know, grab a couple Built Bars as you're heading out the door. I do that all the time when I'm running late for work in the morning. So check them out, builtbar.com, and use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your very next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com. And we got one more message from our friends over at betonline.ag, because BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season going strong. NBA finals are here. You've only got a little bit longer to bet on NBA games. So you got to get in on the action while you still can. They've also got NHL, UFC, you name it. They've got it over at BetOnline. So before the next pitch, before the next game, head over to BetOnline. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. It's time to get in on the action. And you can do that using promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Quick reminder that on our road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra at only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. We can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Now, The thing that I want to get to in this final segment is a report that dropped from ESPN's Jonathan Givony, stating that he's not, I mean, and this has been, look, there's been so much smoke around the number one overall pick. You know, does Detroit actually draft Cade Cunningham? It wasn't a foregone conclusion from the moment that they got the number one overall pick. Do they prefer Jalen Green? Do they prefer Evan Mobley, right? Like, I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen with this pick. So Givony wrote in his latest story that teams including Cleveland, Houston, New Orleans, and Oklahoma City are among those making overtures to evaluate what it would take to move up to the number one slot, sources say. But those talks are at an early stage, and any trade is unlikely to be consummated until much closer to the draft, if at all. From all accounts, Detroit is comfortable standing pat at number one and taking Cunningham, but will be active in exploring the possibility of trading down and obtaining additional assets, with Mobley a potential target if something gets done. Mobley? Okay. That, I mean, look, I'm still on Mobley Island, but I'm at like a 60-40 split, because, and I'll talk about the Suns Bucks game very briefly and kind of why that's pushing me a bit, you know, more towards Jalen Green. But I do think that there is so much smoke coming out of Detroit right now that the possibility of that pick being dealt is growing significantly day by day. Because as Detroit is doing all their workouts, as they are interviewing these top prospects, as they are deciding what direction they want to go with their franchise, I mean, I really could see them making that move, right? And not gouging. I don't think Stone's going to get fleeced. But if you're the Rockets, that trade chip that we've talked about before, the fact that the Rockets own the Detroit Pistons pick for the next decade, because of the Stepien rule and because of the really, you know, really drastic protections on that pick, the Pistons can't trade that pick anywhere else, right? They have no control over their first round draft pick until like 2029. And so if you're the Pistons, right, and we are sitting in the year of our Lord 2021, and you're thinking about drafting a generational talent, be it Cade Cunningham, be it Jalen Green, be it Evan Mobley, and conceivably you want to not be in the dregs of the NBA within, I don't know, the next 3, 4, or 5 years, that still puts you at 2025, 2026. You still can't trade a first round pick for the next 3 years if they don't try and somehow get it back from the Rockets. So at what point you have no ability then to utilize that draft pick or draft picks to trade for, other potential star players or other components to build around your new franchise centerpiece, right? Whoever that may be. But if you're the Pistons and you're looking at this situation, this might be their best opportunity to get that pick back from the Rockets, especially if they view the degree of talent between these top prospects, between Cade, Green, Mobley, Suggs. If the gap is not that substantial, then the Pistons would be best served to utilize this opportunity to get back that pick. Because what are they going to do? Like 2 years down the line and like, hey, Houston, knocking on your door. What can we give you for that pick back? Right? This is the one that makes so much sense for the Rockets to go ahead and just, you know what? Here, take the number two. Take the pick swap back, or not the pick swap, just take your pick back with all of its, you know, mountain of protections, and maybe throw in one more of those picks at the end of this year's first round, either the 23rd or the 24th overall pick, or potentially in place of that, a future first round draft pick, because I do really enjoy how stacked and how deep this draft class is. So I'm not 100% certain that throwing in one of those 23rd or 24th overall picks would be the move. But I think that's a pretty competitive package if you're the Pistons, especially if you're not 100%, like 100% clear on taking Cade Cunningham number one overall. Even if it's like a 70-30 split between Cade and, say, Mobley or Cade and Green, right? You get all of those additional assets back. And then as you're developing and growing this young core, this young nucleus that you have at your disposal now with your franchise centerpiece finally in place, then you actually have control of your draft pick to be able to trade it for future, you know, either not future assets, but future pieces to be able to bolster that lineup, right? The way the ebb and flow of the NBA is, as you become a playoff contender, as you kind of grow your young team towards championship aspirations, you start having to make moves to be able to bolster your lineup. And usually at that point, as we've seen for the last half decade with the Houston Rockets, you utilize those first round draft picks to trade for proven veterans, to trade for guys who are going to help your chances to win in the immediate here and now, rather than continuing to develop talent down the pipeline. Now, I mean, that's still a possibility, but again, if they're knocking on the Eastern Conference Finals door somewhere, 4 or 5 years down the line, and they think that they can make a move to acquire a veteran or two, and it's going to take some draft capital to do it, they'd be hard pressed to be able to make that trade if they don't have control of their number one overall pick. So the more that I talk myself into it, the more that I really see it as a genuine possibility. If Troy Weaver and the Pistons are looking at their long-term ability to achieve success and really build a legitimate contender, a legitimate playoff premier team around whatever top prospect they ultimately do take from this draft. So that's my argument there. That's why I think the smoke is very real. And even if the Rockets don't ultimately wind up trading for the number one overall pick, Cleveland is a possibility as well. The New Orleans and OKC ones are a little bit more like head scratchers. Like, what are they doing? Just because they're a lot further down in the pecking order of this year's draft. So unless they're getting ready to cough up some established players, then I'd be hard pressed to imagine that number one overall pick going to one of those two teams. But yeah, interesting stuff out of Jonathan Givony. Now, as we're kind of, you know, rounding third on the way to home, I do want to talk a little bit very briefly about game one, Suns Bucks. And first off, couldn't be happier for Chris Paul, right? You know, makes it to the finals, is absolute, you know, terror, just scorching Brooke Lopez in the high pick and roll, you know, absolutely living in the mid range, what he did for 2 years as a Houston Rocket. Devin Booker doing the same thing, utilizing that high pick and roll, finding switches and exposing the Bucks defense. Giannis, as much as we like to clown Giannis on this podcast, on this show, much respect to him for hyperextending his knee and being back out, you know, playing at a high level just a week later. You could tell he wasn't, you know, he was maybe going like 80% at times, just kind of not coasting, but trying to take it a little easy. And ultimately the Bucks, you know, they didn't get enough production out of Drew Holiday or out of Chris Middleton to make up for the absence of Giannis, right? Because he wasn't Superman in this game. You know, he's so accustomed to being Superman every single night for the Bucks to be in a good spot competitively. Now, they weren't blown out. You know, they kind of hung around late in the game. And I think the biggest area that they adjusted, you know, Coach Bud with an adjustment, was running Giannis at the five. And that's kind of when they made their push late in the game to try and, you know, cut back into the Suns' lead a little bit. But I do just like throughout this entire playoff run, and I've been cheering on Chris Paul. And as soon as, you know, James Harden was knocked out, I was like, all right, well, I want the Suns to win now. If any team's going to win, I want the Suns to win. But I think that there's like a certain sect of like Rockets fans that are, you know, there's some revisionist history there about Chris Paul. And I just want to clear the air, right? And just remind people that there's a reason that he got moved at the end of that 2019 season, right? He'd only played about 60 games each of his two seasons with the Rockets. He was on an albatross contract. I'm not defending the trade whatsoever, but I'm just trying to shine a little bit of a light on it and just remember how things looked back then. And again, like there were numbers, right? They suggested that Chris Paul was still very effective with the bench units, that, you know, that he was still, you know, an influential player on the court. Sure, all of that, right? But at the end of the day, they got bounced again by Golden State. Now, I think my biggest regret and frustration, right, is that Golden State team was gone. That Golden State team was dismantled. So even if they were sitting there thinking, okay, well, we've been bounced by Golden State twice back-to-back seasons, once because Chris was injured, once because he just did not have enough in the tank, just could not play against this Golden State Warriors team. That mentality probably should have shifted because that Warriors team no longer existed. KD left. Klay Thompson was a gigantic question mark. What all was going on with that Warriors team? And ultimately, I think that Rockets fans, and myself included at times, you know, look back at CP3 and really wonder, well, what could have happened? And there's always these conversations, right, about, okay, you know, it's Maury's fault, Tillman's fault, Harden's fault, maybe a little bit of MDA's fault. I don't know, right? You know, maybe some fault with Chris, right? He's a very abrasive personality. And if you're not able to, you know, actually deliver in these crucial moments, then, and you're demanding the most out of, say, a James Harden, then I'm sure that Harden would take exception to that a little bit. But even throughout some of these playoff series, like even throughout the Western Conference Finals against the Clippers, you know, Chris Paul missed the first two games and then he came back and he was pretty rough around the edges in his first couple games back and then kind of quiet. So, I mean, like, you know, he hasn't been, you know, on this 30-10 tear throughout the entire playoffs. He's had some really impressive games, like the closeout game against the Clippers and just now game one against the Bucks. But those games are still kind of like few and far between for him. So I just think that the dynamic that the Rockets were running, the system that they had in place that, you know, was predicated on isolations for Chris Paul and James Harden and very little, you know, I guess very little actual play running, was not the best way to utilize his talent at that point. So I don't know. I come back to it and I just think, you know, it's constantly one of those what ifs, what if, what if, what if, what if. And I will bury, you know, my final point is just, I'm happy for Chris Paul. I'm happy he's getting a chance in the finals right now. Sorry, PJ Tucker. I'm not going to root for Tucker against Chris Paul. Love me some PJ Tucker. And he looked like he was on the way to complete the gauntlet of former Rockets teammates. First the Heat with Trevor Ariza, then the Nets with James Harden, then the Hawks with Clint Capella. And, you know, the final domino with Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns. But ultimately, I want the Suns to win. I think that it'll be, you know, an incredible story for Chris Paul. And it's just a damn shame that it couldn't have happened with the Houston Rockets. But that's going to be my final point for today's show. As always, thank you so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing. Please go hit that subscribe button on YouTube or on Apple, Spotify, Google, Odyssey app, wherever you listen to your podcast. I would sincerely appreciate it. But for today's show, that's going to do it. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.